Hi there, I'm Stacey Mulcahy. I'm a technical evangelist with Microsoft out of New York City. And I am starting a new series that's going to be talking about, I just want to call it making, but it's really Internet of Things. But we're going to look at a very low level of how do you get started with hardware if you have a software background. Hi there, I'm Stacey Mulcahy, a technical evangelist with Microsoft out of New York City. And I am really stoked about this whole series. We're going to be talking about that marketing buzzword, Internet of Things, but we're going to actually, you know, take it down and talk about hardware and what it means to a software developer and how you can combine the two and have a whole lot of fun with it. And, you know, maybe make playful things, but also practical things that can, you know, take you into that realm of IoT. So once again, if you want to get a hold of me, you can find me on Twitter, LinkedIn. You can also go to my blog, and I'll be posting anything that we do in this series on my blog as well after each week. So every project that we discuss or dissemble or kind of deconstruct, I will have code samples, pictures, video, etc. up on my blog. So Internet of Things. I found this image today and I kind of laughed a little bit. And, you know, someone's like, this is what the Internet of Things is all about. And Internet of Things is one of those big terms that people are using all over the place to describe something that's very, very vague. And for me, Internet of Things just means connected spaces. Maybe it's, you know, your fridge being a little bit smart, for example. Maybe it means that you can connect to your Nest. Maybe it means you can control your lights with your phone. Or, you know, send something to your printer just by tweeting, etc. Like, it's just connected spaces and, you know, particularly unusual ways right now. And there's a lot of stuff that's kind of revolving around IoT right now, whether it be accelerators that are starting up to kind of fund these initiatives. You're starting to see more hardware hackathons. You're starting to see this big interest again in microcontrollers and, you know, how they work and people kind of playing with them a little bit. And so what we're going to do in this first session is we're going to kind of just go through the landscape of what you probably need to get started. And then we're going to talk about in the future sessions, projects that I've built that are probably a little bit reverent, maybe a little bit fun, some maybe a little practical, but they're going to cover the spectrum, and we're going to go through and look at how I built them in terms of the hardware, in terms of what kind of microcontroller I might have chose, or what kind of process or software on the background. And I'm going to be all over the place in this series. I'm going to be using every kind of software you can imagine. So, you know, there might be Python one time, there might be JavaScript another, might be C#. It might be, you know, me setting up servers all over the place, because at the end of the day, when you're working in this space, you need to get out of your comfort zone with software. One of the things when it comes to, you know, working in this space and hardware is everyone's heard a lot about microprocessors. And the, you know, microprocessors allow you to basically read sensor input amongst other things, right? I mean, we've seen a whole change in the landscape from even 5 years ago. One of the big problems right now for a lot of people when they start is, you know, one of their biggest fears, along with, you know, maybe setting themselves on fire or, you know, accidentally electrocuting themselves, which you're not going to do if you're careful. But one of the biggest problems is just choosing what you want to work with and what, you know, what suits your needs. So for microcontrollers, there are a bunch of choices, and you have to make this choice carefully depending on what you want to do with your project. So some projects are fairly simple. Sometimes you're just going to say, okay, well, I want to have a photoresistor sensor, and I want to know if it's light or dark. And if not, I want to trigger an LED, something along those lines. Sometimes you want to have something a little bit more complex that maybe it goes to the internet and it looks, you know, up an API. And based on that knowledge, it will move something physically or change something physically. Those, you know, you have to think about your project and what you want to do with your end goal in order to choose the right microcontroller. And so we're going to go over some of the microcontrollers that you can start to use. I have a bunch of them that I'm actually going to show you and just, you know, point out some of the things about them. But we're going to walk through just the landscape quickly. So for most people, we've heard of Arduinos. And Arduinos, they range in price depending on where you're getting started. But, you know, an Uno can cost you $30. You can get one that's running like a Linux, and it's, I think it's Wi-Fi enabled, Yung, I think they pronounce it. It's about $75, $80 now. So, you know, they range in price. And they range in processors, they range in features, all the way up. But for the most, if you're just starting and you're kind of just like not sure what you want to do, and you're going to play with a couple of sensors or LEDs or write some simple programs, an Arduino Uno will just suit you fine. And it's, you know, a low cost investment. Some of the other microcontrollers out there that are, you know, gaining popularity, Spark.io, they do a really good job. It's really, really tiny. It comes on a breadboard, you know, for you. They basically have a REST API that you can use. So any of the input that you are capturing is actually being captured in the API. So it's being stored and you can use it elsewhere, which is a really, really handy feature. And you're starting to see other places do that as well. SparkFun, a company that sells a lot of components, have kind of released a similar idea in terms of connecting to the cloud and providing that data to you. There's a Raspberry Pi, of course. We've heard a lot about Raspberry Pi, originally, you know, created as a computer to do for educational purposes, running Linux. So, you know, on Raspberry Pi, you can run things like Node, Python. You can install pretty much what you want if you're used to kind of working on a Linux machine. It's just the same kind of thing. And once again, you know, fairly low cost, and you can do a variety of things with it. Now, the Raspberry Pi is a little Linux machine. You can run it that way. So you could, you know, use it as a web server. You could use it as a file server. Variety of things that you might want to do. You might want to install, you know, something on it and just run games on it. But you can also, because it does include GPIO pins, you can start to get information from sensors. So you're starting to see that these little self-contained computers for $40 really, really do pack a punch. You have the Intel Galileo, and they just came out, I believe, with the version 2 of it. And again, you know, you can basically run a variety of OSs. You can put a Windows OS on that as well, and you can use that on the Galileo, and you can get those inputs. You can run it like a standard machine. You have a variety of options. So, you know, if you go to buy something like this and you're not quite sure and you don't want to make the investment, something like a Galileo or a Raspberry Pi might be a really good idea for you, because you could use it as a computer. Or you could say, okay, well, I'm going to start playing with some sensors and GPIO and start creating something that's more in the physical, you know, interaction realm. I mean, there's a lot of other options. If you're a .NET person, there's Netduino. There's a variety of Netduinos that you can use. There's, you know, Teensys, which are really, really small and low-cost microcontrollers. They do require you to have a little bit of knowledge in terms of soldering, so you have to be quite comfortable, you know, because you have to basically put them together a little bit. But, you know, if you're comfortable doing that, you know, for $10 and you just want to run something very simple, you know, you're set with that. You also have, on the same kind of, I guess, price range from Adafruit, you have like the Trinket, for example. Once again, I just picked one up. I think it was like $9. I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do with it again, but for $9, it's sitting there and it's one other microcontroller I can kind of leverage. And so for a lot of these things, you'll find that people use the microcontrollers, at least the bigger ones, whether it be like the Uno or the Raspberry Pi or that kind of thing. A lot of people will use them to prototype interactions because it's very, very easy to just, you know, hook up a breadboard and start, you know, plugging in your wires and making your circuits and, you know, using them for prototyping. And then when you actually need to kind of deploy something or install something, especially if it's a physical installation and you want to have something small and tiny, a lot of people will switch to a smaller microcontroller, for example. But again, it really depends on your project and you know, what you're going to do. So this also kind of, you know, brings up the question of, well, what do you want to be doing in your project? For some people, they want to create something simple that's just, you know, checking a light source to see if, you know, if it's bright or dark. And if so, maybe they light up some LEDs, right? Something that's very, you know, takes in a sensor outputs. So input output kind of idea. Some people want to, you know, take something physical and maybe they want to take data from the internet. So maybe someone goes and aggregates a whole bunch of tweets, and then based on the tweets, if there's a certain number of tweets on, you know, it's trending against one of their hashtags, maybe it lights something up. Maybe it sends them an email. Maybe they have a little sensor that sits on their washing machine, you know, that detects vibration, and when it stops, it will tweet them to tell them that their laundry's done, for example, right? So those things are a little bit more complex. And when it comes down to working with, you know, those kind of interactions, you really need to think about, you know, where you're going with your project, and that helps you decide what microcontroller to get. So if you're working on something that's going to require you to parse a lot of data, you know, hit an API, do anything that's kind of like takes up a bit of memory, you're not going to want to go necessarily with something like the UNO alone, for example. You might need something that needs more memory, that needs, you know, a bigger processor, that kind of thing. But, you know, if you're doing, for the most part, if you just want to take, you know, proximity input and, you know, maybe update some LEDs or something like that along those lines, UNO's great. It's just one of those things that people tend to forget when it comes to microcontrollers is that, you know, something like parsing a JSON file or parsing XML, for example, some kind of feedback that you might get from an API, it takes up a lot of memory. And so it's not something that, you know, necessarily you're going to want to write in Arduino code, for example. So you might use something else. You might, you know, again, you might be interfacing with a program, a Python program, you know, processing that kind of thing. So this is kind of the landscape as it is right now for microcontrollers. And the good thing is you have a lot of choices. And throughout the next couple weeks, I'm not going to stick to one microcontroller. I'm going to be using pretty much everything that you see in the screen at some point, if not more, just to kind of try things out and see how they work and kind of play a little bit with these items. When you first start getting involved with, you know, any of the microcontrollers or doing any kind of hardware, those kind of things, there's a lot to learn if you're really not familiar with it. And so one of the main things that you got to learn is how to read a circuit diagram. And there's a lot of software out there that can help you do this. Once again, this will all be listed in the resources, but there's, you know, stuff like Fritzing, there's looking up symbols for, you know, how to read a circuit. There's a bunch of stuff that you kind of need to get familiar with. And so for me, when I first started, I had no knowledge. I basically didn't even know Ohm's Law. And so I had to look up everything, and often I would just search for images that people might have blogged, and I'd look for, like, Arduino circuit, button, LED, and whatever, and I'd kind of start that way, and I'd learn how to kind of dissect what they had done and reverse engineer it. And for me, this is no different than software. Often I'll take a library in software and I'll look under the hood and be like, oh, that's how they did it. And so I first got started quite a bit by looking at other circuits and then saying, okay, so this is how it's working, and kind of reverse engineering. The other thing I started to do that's actually, you know, will totally benefit your process is that every time you make a circuit is that you take a photograph of it and write yourself a couple notes. And then that way, you know, you have a picture of it in memory. So even if it gets, you know, you take it apart at some point in the future, you still have some reference in some sense, and you just document that stuff. So when it comes to, you know, starting out with hardware, you need to get something along the lines of a microcontroller is what I'd recommend. They make it very easy for you. You don't have to worry about programming like an Atmel chip or anything like that. So you can just get started with something like an UNO, Raspberry Pi, Intel Galileo. A lot of them have these packages that you can buy anywhere from, you know, $60 to $100, and they come with almost everything you need to get started. And so they'll come with all the jumper cables, they'll come with the power source, they'll come with the board, they'll come, some of them take little SD cards for hard drives, so they'll come with that, and a variety of sensors to get you started. And it's a really, really good deal. Like, financially, those totally make sense, especially if you're not quite sure what you want to do yet. And so, you know, starting off with one of those becomes really easy for you to start, you know, to get kind of playing in this space. So what I'm going to do now is I'm just going to kind of walk through and show some of the microcontrollers that I have and just explain, like, when you might use them, what they're good for, and what I probably, you know, plan to or intend to use them in the future for some of the projects that we're going to show. All right, so what I'm showing here is a Raspberry Pi. And Raspberry Pi, this is actually going to be the B model, and you know this. Sorry, just going to switch this, because it has the two USB ports. And the Raspberry Pi, once again, it comes, you can get it basically, you can buy the OS for it on an SD card. And it's a kind of like a flavor of Linux. It's Raspbian. And so if you're, you know, familiar with any of, you know, running Linux, installing things, you know, any of those kind of things, then you'll be very familiar with this. If you're not, but you're very familiar, just, you know, you, let's say you primarily work on a Mac, you might be doing a lot of PHP or Python, maybe more open source. This is definitely something you'll, you know, you'll have no problem getting used to. So Raspberry Pi, basically, once again, you can buy kind of like a pre-configured SD card. I recommend that. Otherwise, you gotta flash the drive, and it doesn't take that long. It's not that hard, but once again, it's one more thing you gotta do. And what you do with the drive is right there. That's where you put in your SD card. And once you have that, the only other thing you need to do with your Raspberry Pi is that you need to connect it at the very beginning. Typically, you need to connect it to a monitor. Maybe you connect in a keyboard and a mouse. And what you can do at that point is configure anything that you need to configure. Now, the beauty of a lot of these microcontrollers is that you can configure them so that you can SSH in. And so that means that you can start to run these items headless. So once you've got them configured with what you want to do on your computer, you can just SSH in. If you're on a Mac, you just SSH. If you're on if you're on Windows, you're going to PuTTY. And you can start controlling it right from SSH, which is amazing because it means that you can have it pretty much anywhere, you know, as long as you're on the same, or as long as you know it's IP, and you can just SSH in and, you know, start to download stuff, start to configure stuff, do whatever you need to do with it. And so before, back in the day when Raspberry Pi first came out, you would have to go into basically the hard drive and kind of configure it so that you could SSH in. But by now, it's set to default. I think by 2012, 2013, it's now set to default. So, you know, as long as you know the IP, you can pretty much, you know, and you can get it on the network. So once again, it comes with an Ethernet cable right there. And you can put it on the network on, you know, and if you're on the Wi-Fi, you can figure out its IP, and then you can, you know, easily SSH in. And there's a bunch of tutorials out there, and they couldn't make it any easier for you in terms of doing that. And so something like a Raspberry Pi, I tend to use Raspberry Pis for things that, you know, once again, I have one set up as at home as a file server, basically like a web server, a testing environment, for example. I use Raspberry Pi for a couple installations that I was trying to get feedback in from some sensors. So you'll see that the Raspberry Pi right here, they have all of the GPIO pins right here. And so what you need, or something that makes it really handy with these GPIO pins, is because they haven't really named them or labeled them. I think in later versions, they actually have like a little white signifier here. But in these versions, they're not labeled, so you don't really know what the numbers are and what pins you're looking at. You can start to use what was made by Adafruit, which is great. You can also make your own, but it is, sorry, just going to let this sit there for a sec. It is what's called a cobbler. And so the cobbler, what you do with the cobbler is you put it on top, and then you have this cable, and I'll just set this down. You have the cable that you run to your breadboard, but the cobbler starts to tell you all of the pins. So you start to know all the pins, what they're named and everything else. Now again, you can pretty much make this yourself quite easily, but the beauty of the cobbler is that it's all done for you, everything's named, and it costs you maybe an extra $7, right? So it's not a big time investment to be using. And so the latest version of working with any of the inputs or outputs in terms of sensors, we call it GPIO. The latest version of the library that you can download to use with Python, for example, it now supports something called interrupts, which back in the day, Raspberry Pi didn't, and that was one of the drawbacks. Is, you know, using something like the NeoPixels, a long string of NeoPixels that, you know, you might be fading lights, etc. You needed interrupts in order to be able to work with those. And so, you know, Raspberry Pi might not have been the right choice, but now it supports it. So you can start to use pretty much everything with it. The one thing with the Raspberry Pi, once again, like I said, there's an Ethernet cord, but you're probably going to want to get a Wi-Fi, you know, kind of dongle. There's a bunch of different kinds. There's like a Wi-Pi. They, you know, branded it. There's, you know, just little USB dongles that you can get. You need to configure those. Sometimes it can be a little tricky, but once you configure those, when I say tricky, I mean, you know, it's not right out of the box. It'll take you a couple minutes, but once it works and you're good to go. And so, you know, I would recommend if you're going to get a Raspberry Pi, you either get a starter kit or you buy the Raspberry Pi, you get a cobbler, and you definitely get a USB dongle. Because the rest of the stuff, like a mouse if you need to start up with or any of that kind of stuff, you know, you know, even a monitor, for example, you'll probably have access to. So that's a Raspberry Pi. So on the Raspberry Pi, because it's, you know, running Linux, I'll probably be showing examples here using Python or using Node. Those are kind of the two things I like to use on a Raspberry Pi. So any of the projects that we work with in terms of Raspberry Pi, which we will, those are the two languages that you'll probably be a little bit exposed to if you haven't, you know, used either of those before. So I'm going to show you a basic Arduino. All right, so what we're looking at here is an Arduino Uno. I already have a circuit that's kind of hooked up, which I can kind of show afterwards. But the Uno, once again, very low cost. And it gives you a variety of things with it. So if you look over here, you'll see that you get a whole bunch of, you know, digital pins. You get, on this side, you get some analog pins. We have the ground, we have the power, we have the reset over here. And so the one nice thing about working with Arduinos is that for, you know, some people who aren't very comfortable in terms of making circuits, they sell a whole bunch of shields. And the shield basically goes on top of it. And I think I have an example of a shield here. Goes on top and it'll, you know, provide you with some functionality. So you can get a Wi-Fi shield. You can get a relay motor shield. You can get, you know, this, for example, is a multi-purpose shield that, you know, fits right on top. You'll notice the pins will fit right on top. So when I place it on top like that, I can put it right in. So it doesn't take away from any of those kind of, you know, those features. I can still use all those pins if I need those pins. Once again, this is kind of like an all-in-one shield. This allows you to play with a bunch of little things like a pot and, you know, different kind of like sensors or whatnot. But, you know, a shield can give you a bunch of different kind of functionality right on top, and it does all the hard work for you. So, you know, often I've used, for example, a Wi-Fi shield or Ethernet shield to give myself, you know, internet capability, for example, or XB if I wanted to communicate as well on a radio signal I might use. So, you know, that's one of the beauties as well when it comes to working with some of these. And again, if the pins are the same on the shield, you can use them in other microcontrollers as well. So that's the other thing to consider. So shields are kind of like one of those nice little investments, but I always personally associate them with Arduino and always forget, like, yeah, you can, you know, you can start to use them with other things. And you'll see in your travels when you start to search for sensors and things like that, that you'll see a bunch of shields that are available. So, you know, a basic Uno, and again, it's, you know, very small. I've got it connected right here. This will connect into USB to my computer. And so it'll communicate through USB. I'll run a program on it, which we'll show towards the end here. And you'll just get a sense of, okay, well, here's how it connects. And here's how I need to start working with it. I'm going to now, sorry, there's so many things to show. What I'm going to show now is an Intel Galileo. Now, I just got this board. I'm very, very, very psyched about it. Maybe I can do this. Maybe that makes more sense. There we go. Very psyched about it. Once again, the beauty of this is you can start to run a flavor of Windows on this. So if you're, you know, a Windows developer, it's, I mean, right up your alley. For me, you know, I'm going to start to play with the pins because if I notice here, it's got all those same kind of pins that we had on, you know, a Raspberry Pi or on an Arduino. And in fact, that shield I just showed you could actually work on this Galileo. And so when you start to look at this board a little bit, this is, you know, it's bigger, right? It's going to require more power. The processor is more intense. Right, we look here and we see that this is where our hard drive is going to be. So, you know, depending on what OS you want, you flash a drive and then you put it here. you know, you got an Ethernet port, got some USB, you've got pretty much everything you need. So you want to go and make that, you know, home security platform that has a camera outside and you know, send you a picture anytime it gets motion, you know, this is what you want. Same thing with a Raspberry Pi. Like, that's where the money is for that kind of thing. So, yeah, Intel Galileo, you know, they just came out with the second version. It's definitely worth checking. And I'm really looking forward to making a couple things definitely on this program with it. I think something that we'll be using the Galileo for will be, you know, we're going to interact with a couple of different APIs, have a proximity sensor with this one, I think. So we're going to, you know, not really test its limits in terms of memory or processing, but, you know, give you a good basis of how you get up and running with it. I'm going to show you next. This one is like a little Netduino Mini. And again, really, really tiny. The pins are on the side. And again, the beauty of this kind of smaller microcontroller is that it's really good for those projects that you want this kind of hardware hidden. So let's say you're doing a photo frame, that if someone knocks on the photo frame, you know, it sends someone else, for example, it sends someone else a message or something along the lines of that, or whatever it may be. You know, maybe you're just making a hula hoop for someone that's going to have a string of LEDs that's going to light up based on, you know, an accelerometer data or something along those lines. Something like this is really, really ideal for it. They, you know, in terms of battery, they don't take up a lot of battery. They're very small. They're very easy to hide, but they give you a lot of the same functionality and power. And so, you know, something along these lines, whether it be, you know, here we have an Arduino. I think I actually have a Trinket that I just ordered, and I haven't put together. So you'll see this right out of the package. Super stoked about this. Once again, I think this cost me $9. And that's what the Trinket looks like. And for this one, for example, I'm just going to do something simple that's more along the lines of a wearable. But again, I have to do a little bit of work. I have to solder the stuff together and put in these headers. And once I've got that, I'm kind of good to go. But again, you know, very low cost, $9, easy to start out with if you're not really quite sure what you want to play with. Once again, because it's small, you know, low cost, you're dealing with a lower profile in terms of memory and things that it can do as well. But generally, you know, they're pretty much workhorses. Something that I'm hoping to kind of use in terms of wearables is going to be this little sucker, which is a LilyPad Arduino, made specifically for wearables. I think they have a whole new line. Adafruit does in terms of wearables, and I think it's called Gemma, but I could be wrong. And this, once again, is a little, you know, it's got everything you need. It's got all of the things, all the pins. You use conductive thread, and conductive thread looks just like your normal thread, but it's kind of a little thicker and it's silver. And so, you know, you can basically set up your micro controller here. So maybe you're building something, you know, for cycling, for example. You want to have it when someone taps on the right, it shows a signal on the back of a hoodie, for example. So, you know, you could have this anywhere within that jacket. And then what you could do, instead of the wires that we see on an Arduino like this, what you can do is use conductive thread. And with the conductive thread, you can just kind of sew throughout the garment, right? And so it'll still retain those wires and still get those signals. And the thing about working with a LilyPad or any of the wearable stuff is that there's a lot of components they've really thought about, and they've done a really good job in this space. So you can get something like a GPS module. You can get like little LEDs that are meant just for it. Other stuff will work with it as well. But, you know, stuff that's just meant for it, a little battery pack, etc. So these are a lot of fun if you're thinking about doing wearables. And if you want to do wearables, you know, you got to kind of change what kind of microcontroller you want, because this is so nice and thin, right? It's so lovely in that way. And it sits flat. Like, this is made to go into a garment. You know, even something like a Trinket, a little bit smaller, you know, for like a little princess headpiece or something for Halloween, or you know, lighting up some wings or something. totally makes sense. But you wouldn't want one of the bigger kind of microprocessors, you know, to do something along those lines. So wearables is kind of its own beast onto itself. But, you know, hopefully we'll do something fun with that as well. So the Spark Core device, or Spark.io, if you want to go to the site, the beauty of this is it's Wi-Fi enabled. And I cannot begin to tell you how important that is, because for all the devices I've showed you so far, they are not inherently Wi-Fi enabled. You need to get a dongle, like a USB dongle. You need to buy a shield. And for a lot of the things that, at least for me personally, that interest me, I need access over Wi-Fi. The other thing that's really great about this is they have their own REST API. So let's say you have you hook up a button and someone's, you know, clicking a button. Every time that button gets clicked, maybe you want to capture that. You know, who knows? Maybe you're capturing accelerometer. Maybe you're capturing, a bendy sensor, whatever it may be. The beauty of this is it stores it on the back end for you. Does that work for you that you might inherently do yourself, whether you know it or not? Or at some point in time, you'll probably need, and it does the work for you. So it means that you can start to use this device to do one thing, and you can start to create experiences around it because it has a REST API, which is, you know, I hate to sound so much in love with a single device, but it's really a beautiful thing. And they've really thought about the way that they wanted to come out into this kind of IoT space. And so, you know, personally, as much as I can't wait to, you know, harness the power of the Galileo, this little beast has a lot of power, and I'm very excited to start working a little bit more with it in terms of what it can do. It's so tiny, and you can basically, you know, you can imagine the possibilities of where you can fit it. And, you know, you have a variety of options in terms of programming it. And so, you know, example Node.js, again, another very common one where you're starting to see people adopting that a little bit more. And so for, I think it's $40, and the support by the group is pretty amazing. So, you know, once again, just one more kind of device to think about. I think in terms of microcontrollers, I've kind of gone through my little stack of what I have to play with. But I wanted to show you just different form factors, what you might use something for, what you might not. So again, something like this would be really good if you wanted to, you know, store data, get it somewhere else, you know, depending on, think about just people, you know, some kind of input that you might want to store later, for example, and get access to. That, you know, that might be awesome to use. Also, the Wi-Fi period makes it awesome. Something like the trinket, again, might be really great for your next kind of like Halloween craft, for example, which, you know, hopefully we're going to do. So you have your various options on what you want to be using and how you want to use them and where you want to spend your money. But, you know, here's just a kind of basic intro to, you know, microcontrollers. There's so many options out there. Even if you go to buy an Arduino, like I said, there's a gazillion models. There's the Uno, the Mega, you know, Leonardo, the Young, all sorts of different options. You know, just kind of decide on your project first would be my advice a little bit. I make your first project fairly simple and then work from there. I wouldn't buy a beast that does everything if you're not going to harness that power. And you know what? It's pretty fun when you have a couple of these lying around. You can be like, oh, now I can, you know, I'm going to use this or I'm going to use that and start playing with them a little bit more. So what I'm going to show you now is just a couple of sensors to give you a couple of ideas. And like I said, I have a bunch of projects that we're going to be all build, and I'll kind of show you the circuits behind them. I'll, you know, document all that stuff, and then we'll deconstruct how I built them. And so it will be a combination of hardware and software. What I just wanted to show you, though, to get your kind of like appetite going for this, is just sensors and the ability of inputs and outputs and, you know, some of the things that you have out there. And I only have a few things to show at the moment, but there's so many different opportunities. So what I did here is I have a circuit, and this will be in a project that we're going to dissect in the future. And basically what I have is what's called NeoPixels, and this is what's a NeoPixel ring. NeoPixels are created by Adafruit. Adafruit is a company that's based out of New York. They deal specifically in electronics, and they do amazing stuff. And they created these NeoPixels, which are very, very bright and they're individually addressable. So I can start to run kind of animation sequences, and I can do full colors and that kind of thing. And so in the future, we will have a project where I have this proximity sensor here. I don't know if you can see it. I'll see if I can kind of hook it up. I did a really bad job of soldering this like a year ago. That's one other thing to mention is, you know, and I'll show you the soldering iron I have. Spend the money. If you think that you're going to be doing this as anything more than a little bit of a hobby, spend the money, because it makes all the difference in terms of your soldering iron. You want something with variable temperature, something that comes with maybe a couple of tips. And, you know, if you get one of those little stations, you will thank yourself, because I was making all sorts of awesome joints yesterday that I never could have done with one of those cheapy little wands that you buy for $15 or so. So just, you know, a little side note. But this, for example, basic proximity sensor. I shouldn't say basic. This is actually not a cheap device to buy. It's probably around $25. But it gives you high fidelity. So, you know, if you put your hand towards it like that, it gives you like great granularity. And so, you know, you can really start to measure, like, the closer something gets, maybe the louder something gets, for example. In this case, we're going to build something where the closer you get, it will activate a whole kind of light display that this was part of, or is part of. It's just one component. There's more to it, which will then trigger out some software and an API, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, just an idea, like proximity and distance. You have another one for, I'll just move this out of the way. Another one for kind of just like, you have a basic PIR sensor. And again, this is really good just to detect if there's any movement in the room. What it does is it calibrates. You can't really see it that well here, but it calibrates and it takes a snapshot of the room. And then what you do afterwards, it'll tell you if there's any motion. So it's really crazy. It does a really good job of just detecting straight up motion. So if you need granularity in terms of proximity, that's not what you want. If you want presence, this is something that you want. And this is, you know, once again, a $10 component at the most. Ideas of other common components people buy. Always buy yourself a little push button. These things are next to nothing. You just need to use basically ground and power. You can make a basic circuit, but you can start working with the basics, and it helps you test certain things. So if you don't know if your LEDs or your light sequence or something is working, you know, you can start to use a button or something along those lines. Now, that's a mini button. It's so tiny. It's so cute. I don't know who would use it. That's a big button, right? You've got like a huge kind of more arcade style button, right? And so you can start to use this as well in terms of some of your projects. So you can start to look for components that make sense. If you have a Unity game and you want to create some kind of controls that are non-traditional, you know, think about creating yourself a little arcade case. You know, you could 3D print it. You could start buying some of these, you know, joystick, some of these little buttons, wire it up, you know, run some LEDs when game's over. It'd be awesome. Here's another basic one. Once again, some of these are very, very cheap. I'm going to lay it down. This is like a photoresistor. So what happens is that the darker it gets, so usually you test it just by putting your hand over it. The darker it gets, you know, you'll get that signal. So this is really handy for creating something like a basic nightlight. You could buy a whole bunch of LEDs, you know, and which have, you know, for example, you could run a bunch of LEDs in a sequence. You could maybe put them in front of, you know, some kind of transparent, you know, film or whatnot. And you could just use this to detect, you know, how dark it is in the room, for example, and run a very, very simple circuit that way. One other sensor, if I have it here, that I've used in a project that we're going to look at next week is kind of like a force-resistant sensor. And so, you know, a lot of these have different kind of things you can detect. Sometimes you can detect how much pressure. Sometimes you can detect, you know, for example, like this is a bendy sensor. So what it's going to do is it's going to, the more that you bend it, you'll get different signals. So we're going to actually look at, like, if someone's bending it and then do something based on if they're bending it, right? And you start to think, well, what are the applications for that? Don't worry, I got one, and it's pretty awesome. So we'll show you something along those lines. But sometimes you'll see these sensors, force-resistant kind of sensors, and they're kind of like pads that you can press on. So you can see if someone's touched something, for example. You can also use, that actually brings up, you can use something like, this is going to be kind of like a conductive tape, for example. So, or you have also, to show you other components, conductive thread. And so, you know, for example, if you want to check if someone's putting pressure on something, you can get a sensor that gives you high fidelity and will tell you, like, how much and give you kind of like a range of values, you know, almost like if you want to weigh something. Or you can do something that's a little bit more kind of low fidelity and use something that's called, like, Velostat, for example, and I'll show a project I did with that, where basically it looks like a garbage bag, and if you run conductive thread on it, it will give you the signal of if someone's pressed on it or not. So it's really perfect for that case scenario where you don't care where they're or how much they're pressing, just that they are. So if someone steps on something, for example. So, you know, for that, I'm going to show a DDR mat. For this, I'm going to show how I basically hijacked a puppet to help kind of play music, believe it or not. So we have all sorts of projects that we're going to go through with some of these sensors. And all the parts, once again, I'll list, and then I'll talk about all the software, and everything will be readily available. I guess my kind of question to anyone out there that's watching this now is just as simple as, if there's something you want to know or you want to look into or you think would be fun, or you challenge me, there's an API or there's a sensor that you want to use and you can't think of a use for it, you know, let's put that in the comments and see if maybe I can address that, because that's the kind of challenge I'm looking for here. So I think I'm going to leave you guys with that, just enough to get you started. In our next session, we're going to cover just the basics of kind of writing a program. We'll start with Arduino, for example. It's going to be a very, very short session. I'm going to show you how to use Visual Studio with a plugin to you know, write Arduino code and then put it to the board, which once you do that, you'll never use Arduino IDE again. We'll cover that, and then we'll start jumping into a bunch of these projects. So I can't wait to get started and, you know, start making stuff. So are you interested? Have I kind of got you hooked? Well, if so, there's a whole bunch of resources I've put in one big list. And I've put everything from, you know, Arduino comparisons, microcontroller comparisons, where you can buy stuff. So my, you know, biggest recommendations for purchasing stuff is always going to be go to Adafruit, go to SparkFun. You can go to a site called DigiKey, too, if you know exactly what you're looking for. But DigiKey is a little, it does look like someone just threw up their inventory list onto the web. So you have to know exactly what you're looking for. But if so, you know, you can get a lot of great deals on DigiKey. And as well in this list, I have just, you know, plugins that you can use for programming, you know, all the basics to kind of get you started. And so it's just all here in one place. So I'm going to leave you with that. And I hope that you join me in the next session and we'll start to get, you know, making, which I'm really, really excited about. There's something super rewarding about, you know, physically making something that works in a digital realm and in the sense of, you know, a satisfaction that you derive out of that, that you just can't get anywhere else. It's not the same as, you know, making a simple website, I'll tell you. So I hope you join me in the next sessions. And until then, keep making.